What's on your mind?
The era of big government is over.
You want to cut the line?
I want to change the sentiment. We're running away from ourselves. And I know we can score points that way. I was a principal architect of that campaign strategy, right along with you, Judge. But we're here now. Tomorrow night we do an immense thing. We have to say what we feel. That government, no matter what its failures in the past, and in times to come, for that matter, government can be a place where people come together. And where no one gets left behind. No one gets left behind. An instrument of good. I have no trouble understanding why the line tested well, Josh. But I don't think that means we should say it. I think that means we should change it.
I think so, too. What do you think, Josh?
I make it a point never to disagree with Toby when he's right, Mr. President.
Then you and Sam get your people together and get to work.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
That's the bottom of the team! Check the scanning monitor! Start tracking before going too deep!
That's the bomb, that's it.
Eight!
Is he dead?
Yes, the bomb was eaten!
He was swallowed whole?
No! Dude! Check the scanning monitor!
He's got hydrogen psychosis. Crazy eye.
Steve, they think you got crazy eye.
Get them out of the fucking water.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Nobody, I mean nobody, delivers a pregnant pause like Richard Schiff on the West Wing.
Yeah.
Maybe William Shatner.
Yeah, William, that's right. Well, Richard Schiff as Toby Ziegler on The West Wing could not only deliver a pregnant pause, but also no one could whisper a line quite like Richard Schiff on that show.
He almost always whispered.
Yeah, that's right. But that's what made him seem so real. I mean, he didn't seem like he needed to project or to, you know, go particularly over the top with his lines, and everything was kind of very low-key, but he became... easily for me the most compelling character on that show.
Oh, he was by far my favorite character.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Margaret, Leo's secretary, is talking about how she crashed the email system. And no, it was the one where she was about the calorie content in the muffins or something, the fat content.
Yeah.
And he tells her, you know, get a plastic bag, don't handle the muffin, and I'll send it to the lab. And she says, you're mocking me now, aren't you? And Richard Schiff does the most amazing thing with his face and his voice. He's so apologetic, and he goes, yes, I am fucking with him. But the way he delivers that line is priceless. One of my favorite scenes in the whole series.
Yeah. And I love when he's helping out President Bartlett with the Butterball hotline number.
Oh, yeah. He's just so amused. Yeah. And you could just it was really remarkable how that cast really – displayed their love for the characters, displayed their love for each other in really small, lovely little ways. It's such a great show.
Area code for Fargo, North Dakota, please.
Yeah, right away.
Right away.
Oh, yeah, I got a great meat thermometer. It was given to me by the king of Toby's, like,
auto sales and
auto sales
Fargo.
Fargo. Oh, West Wing.
And then we did the one of the great scenes from The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, where he gets where Esteban is eaten and he gets the crazy eye. He gets hydrogen psychosis and he gets crazy eye, which is an homage to Michelle Bachmann's address last
enormous
night.
Pupils last night.
Yeah, which for a second, maybe I had my TV adjusted poorly, but he had so much dark eyeliner and dark eye makeup that initially I couldn't tell that she was not looking at the camera. Initially, I just thought she looked like two big, I thought initially she had just like two big black buttons, like that Coraline animated movie, like big black buttons for eyeballs.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, then I heard on NPR this morning as I was trying to get my fucking truck unstuck from the snow.
Oh, God.
Which was comical. But I heard on NPR that she wasn't looking at the lamestream media cameras because she was looking at the Teabagger web feed camera. But then I went over to teabaggerexpress.com, and she's not even looking directly into that one.
Yeah, and she evidently was looking. I mean, I think the word is that she was reading a teleprompter. That she was, maybe it was a prompter that was on a laptop, or I don't know if it was an actual teleprompter. But that's what it was. And then over at Media Matters, they're of course picking apart Breitbart and all those guys for apologizing for the fact that Michelle Bachmann used a teleprompter, when heretofore they had done nothing but blast the president for doing what every president in the world has ever done, which is to read a teleprompter when they're delivering prepared remarks. That's how presidents function. They read teleprompters. Reagan read a teleprompter. Bush, Clinton, the other Bush, they all did.
It's what it's for.
Right.
It's like saying, oh, my God, he drives in a car. It's like, right, when you want to get from one place to another, you ride in a car. When you want to read something in front of people that you've got written down and couldn't possibly memorize, you use a teleprompter. It's called technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then Maddow went off on CNN for even airing that nonsense, the Bachmann thing.
Yeah. I mean,
she's absolutely right. Why elevate this person who is absolutely no one? She's not an official GOP spokesperson.
Yeah.
Why elevate this Tea Party response to national attention? Why shouldn't it have just gone out on teabaggerexpress.org or whatever?
But I assure you, we all flipped over to it. I mean, at least I did.
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't. Well, good for you.
Hell no. I still haven't seen it. I won't give her I know everything I need to know about that. I knew it before the speech.
Yeah.
What she was going to say.
Well,
Paul Ryan. Is it Paul Ryan, that douche?
Yeah, it's Paul Ryan.
What an egregious response that was. It just a complete parallel universe to what – I mean, it's like, did you listen to the speech that the president just gave?
Yeah.
It's like that his response was written 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, what they're doing, and the reason I think that Paul Ryan delivered such a horror story for his response was what they're trying to do to the president at this point is they're trying to make it seem as if all of the forthcoming prosperity, which I believe that we're in an economic upswing at this point, the Dow being one of many indicators of that.
Fuck the Dow.
Well, I know fuck the Dow. I understand that. But, I mean, the Dow is one indicator of several.
It's an indicator of how fat and rich and white people are.
Yeah.
Look, the rich guys are getting richer. Woohoo!
Right. Well, I mean, jobs are being added. I mean, there are any number of things that are, I mean, you know, housing prices are slowly leveling off. And I mean, we're not in a nosedive anymore. I understand and I agree.
Fuck the Dow. I
agree with your sentiment.
Mild recovery, but
that's true.
But fuck the Dow.
But what we know is that we're headed towards, you know, recovery here. I still strongly believe that it's going to be a non-bubble recovery. I don't think we're going to be in some sort of, I mean, that's for the last 30 years, every time there's been a recovery after a recession, it hasn't been, you know, a steady recovery. It's been one of these insane spikes, which then immediately bursts and we end up all getting screwed. Like we have for the last 30 years, every time the bubble bursts.
Bubble, housing bubble. Internet bubble. Yep. There's the Wall Street bubble in the 80s where, you know, just sudden retarded money. And it's usually, you know, a handful of guys pulling bullshit ideas, you know, paper fake money out of their asses and writing it down. I mean, I work for one of these companies. I work for fucking WorldCom. The chief, you know, the biggest tits up corporation cluster fucking history.
Yeah.
And it's just these single-handed douche like Bernie Ebers and a handful of dicks just making stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get out of an economy where that's possible.
Yeah.
We have to get out of an electronic, bullshit, written down, paper, phony money economy where it's possible that a handful of people can just lie and create wealth for themselves, and then that shit pop.
Well,
that's got to stop.
Yeah. Well, the paradox is this. Everyone wants, and I'm talking about voters all the way up to politicians. Everyone wants a fast, immediate recovery. Everyone
yes.
wants the unemployment rate to go from 9.5 back down to 7 in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't. It should not happen that way. As much as I would love to see jobs come back, and as much as I'd love to see a return to some sort of 90s like prosperity, it can't happen like that again. It needs to happen in a deliberative way. It needs to happen the way that I believe the president is trying to do, which is to create investment in infrastructure and to
energy.
Build things again, to innovate things again. Yeah. And that was the most refreshing thing about that address last night is he wants to do all these things, which takes time. The stimulus took a little bit of time. Yeah, it takes time, it takes money, and it takes some patience. And it takes some realization that, you know, the reason we were so screwed in the first place here is because our entire economy was based around artificial bubbles. And as you said, computerized horseshit.
Yeah, made up stuff.
Yeah.
Instruments.
Right.
Financial instruments. I don't want that to be legal anymore. Instruments. I don't want any phony baloney money. I want shit I can see, you know, stuff I can touch. And at the end of the work day, like when I've never been happier professionally, if you can call it a profession, it was a job, but I've never been happier than when I was a pipe layer, when I was a pipe fitter, when I, for 8 hours a day, humped hundreds of pounds of steel pipe up and down stairs and hung it in garages and apartment buildings, because at the end of the day, I could stand back and look and see what I did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I could see the fruit of my labor, and that's what we need. The jobs that are gone, those jobs aren't coming back, period. I mean, the jobs that have been outsourced, no one's going to un-outsource these jobs. Those jobs aren't coming back. The companies may start hiring again. The corporate, you know, mega monsters may start hiring, but they're going to hire, you know, Raji Singh in fucking Bangalore. They're not the jobs that are gone aren't coming back, period. We need to create new industries and new jobs and infrastructure. I want to start seeing CCC camps again. I mean, literally fucking Civilian Conservation Corps camps with people working in them for an honest day's wage and, you know, three hots in a cot. That's what I want to see.
Right.
That's why I wanted the crash in 2008-09 or 7 and 8, whatever it was. That's why I wanted it to be monstrous. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be fucking Dust Bowl. And it just wasn't. It was just not a big enough crisis.
Yeah, and of course that's what it would take in order for people to go, you know what, maybe we shouldn't, you know, build an economy around tech bubbles. Maybe we should actually start to, you know, sit on our hands and you know, maybe look at the television and go, maybe this is going to take some time. And that's a good thing.
What we need is a massive infrastructure collapse.
That's right.
Where people are happy to get a job at $7 an hour chopping fucking wood or planting trees because it's all they can get. We need – I'd love to see America at 15, 17, 19% unemployment where people are fucking begging for government handouts. That's what it's going to take to clean – to flush the system of all this bullshit because the crash wasn't big enough. People still – and look, I'm full disclosure. I am in the process of crashing my own personal economy. Mm-hmm. I am in the process of personally – crashing my system right now because the global system didn't crash, so I'm going to crash my own personal system. I'm going to shed the Farm of Doom and all of its miseries and all of its fucking money pit disasters. All I've been thinking for the last 8 months is that scene in The Money Pit with Tom Hanks and Shelley Long where the tub falls through the floor and crashes like three floors and explodes into the foyer.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Hanks looks down the hole and the camera's down beneath him, and you can see, and he just starts to laugh, like maniacally laugh. That's how I feel. That's how I felt for the last 8 months. Just fuck it.
Yeah.
Because the show was late. I was late getting to the microphone today, and let me tell you why. Because I was down in my basement with a fucking cable snake run 30 feet down some pipe to see why my fucking septic tank is overflowing.
Oh, God.
And my brother-in-law was there because I got it stuck, and he pulled it out, and the shit end of it came and hit me right in the forehead. Literally shit. Literal septic filth slapped me right above my right eye. And right now I am so – my skin is like parchment because I've scrubbed my body like I was in fucking Silkwood. I've from top to bottom been scrubbed. Because on the north side of the Farm of Doom, nothing works anymore. I was cooking dinner the other night when I tweeted about this. It was Saturday or Sunday. Mm. I can't remember because I've just been just in a fugue. But I'm cooking dinner and I hear water. I hear like a waterfall. And I'm like, oh, well, we don't have a waterfall at the Farm of Doom, at least not in the winter when everything's fucking frozen. In the spring, the backyard is flooding, so that would be a waterfall sound. But no, the toilet in the on the new side of the house, the renovated side, is just pouring water into the onto the floor. So I shut it off. I go downstairs. Of course, the in the basement right below that bathroom, water is just raining down into the theater, onto the floor, just raining from the ceiling and from the light fixtures.
Yeah.
And then I just happened to hear a noise inside the wall, and there's this little access panel. So I pull the access panel off, and this standpipe is just spraying water everywhere.
Oh God.
I don't know. I've lived here 7 years on the Farm of Doom, and I don't know where my doo-doo goes. I literally don't know where my septic tank is. I don't know how one half of the house works versus the other, because the normal side of the house, the non addition side, the original 110-year-old house, that has no plumbing problems at all. So that dookie goes to one place and the other part of the house goes another.
And then, subsequently,
I don't care anymore. Right. I'm laughing like Tom Hanks. I'm like, just let J.P. Morgan Chase, all the fine folks at Chase Mortgage, the Chase Home Finance, let them figure out where the dookie goes.
Right.
I'm laughing like Tom Hanks right now. Fuck it.
Yeah. So what you're saying is the F word. I mean, what fuck you're it. Actually saying, not, I mean, be the other F word, not fuck.
Yeah,
but,
foreclosure.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you go.
Come get it.
Yeah.
Come get it.
Have it.
I don't care. There's no scenario other than that, other than a tornado. And I swear to God, I've been praying for months for a tornado to literally take this place off its foundation. I'm not even kidding when I say that. Begging the forces, the force majeure, as it were, to sweep this place off its foundation. That would be the happiest moment of my life. Or a lightning strike or some sort of wiring fire.
Yeah.
While we're not here, obviously. I don't want Peanut to be harmed in any way. But outside of that, I would never sell it for what I paid for it. Mm-hmm. And I simply do not have the kind of cash that I would need to flip, you know, to write the bank a check for the difference. That's just not going to happen ever. And we couldn't possibly sell it, even if I could afford to eat it. So fuck it. I'm in the process of massively downsizing my personal self. I walk through this place and I work from home. I'm here all the time. I can literally feel the weight of my. You know how George Carlin said, "House is where you keep your stuff."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's well, that's where your stuff is. You keep your stuff.
Yeah,
that's my stuff over here. That's what if like I can feel the weight of all my stuff,
mm-hmm.
I just want to shed stuff.
Yeah,
I want to be physically mobile, like where I could just be in one place and then 20 minutes later I could be completely somewhere else and not have all this stuff. I've got 400 pounds of books in the foyer right now in paper bags going to the used bookstore. I've got 6 big hefty bags full of clothes and stuff going to the men's shelter in Omaha. I'm feeling really good about that. I'm going to donate hundreds of things to the homeless guy's shelter. Mm-hmm. I am just getting rid of stuff. I tweeted the other day, I've got books I'm giving away. Fuck it, man. I just want to get light.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been going through the exact same process since 2008-ish. 2009 being the absolute low watermark. I mean, we're talking about, talk about real life. I'm going to get real here. I mean, I had to shut down a business. I had to close up a business, right? I had to go through a short sale. I had to short sell the building that I bought. It was actually part of a building that I bought to house this business. I had to short sell it because it was way, way underwater. The mortgage was predatory on that place. There was a 7-year lockout to sell that goddamn place. Which I couldn't unload it without paying a $90,000 penalty.
Oh, fuck that.
To the lender. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, and then they wouldn't.
You know what my you know what my interest rate is on the Farm of Doom right now? Hmm. Take a guess.
I couldn't even guess. 9%.
Yeah, 9.24%. Yeah. Fuck that.
And you can't refinance because what? It's probably underwater.
When I moved here, I had 4.5.
Yeah.
That was the refi. The refi rate, and I learned it the day I went to sign it. Mm-hmm. Like I went to sign it, and he's like, "Well, the best we could do is this." And I looked at him like, "What? I'm paying literally double, you know, the prime interest rate right now. Are you fucking kidding me? Mm-hmm. You got to be kidding me." So I had to take escrow out. I had to dump my escrow so that my monthlies were basically the same. But then at the end of the year, I got this fucking tax bill I can't pay.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean the property tax bill.
Fuck it.
Right.
I cannot wait to rent. I am salivating to rent. Right.
Like, no.
Just let it be somebody else's problem. Give me a fucking $400 a month rental, and I'm so liberated. I've never slept better.
Yeah, yeah, and I still have got you topped. I know you got thwacked in the face with a shitty snake today, which is just awful, right?
You can't top that.
Yeah. I had three cars voluntarily repoed. Where I had to give them back, right?
Three.
I had, you know what I owned? I owned, talk about bubble, talk about excess. I mean, being ensconced in the midst of the credit bubble. I had three Priuses. They were all company cars. I had to give them back. Gave them all back. That's a pleasant experience to go through. Yeah. My credit is so effing screwed. Okay. You got a short sell in there. You got, by the way, there's also, there's an IRS tax bill that's left over from, 2008, which I'm dealing with right now.
We talked about that the other day. I had one of those.
Yeah.
Me and the IRS are really well connected.
Yeah.
They've got my number on speed dial.
Well, I mean, you talk about getting squashed in the midst of this recession. I mean, it was unbelievable. But part of it was, and this is getting back to our original point, part of it was deliberate. They say, I just got so sick and tired of saying, good Lord, there's all of this shit that I'm dragging behind me. It was a variety of things, one on top of the other, that I just started to dismantle and say, you know what? Screw this. This is ridiculous. So, I mean, I got to the point where, I'm selling my actual house, which is not a, thank God it's not a short sale. Thank God it's not underwater, that I got a 5.25% interest mortgage in 2003-ish, which was very low for that period of time. And so everything is kind of free and clear, except for the fact that it's in the midst of the most shitty winter on the East Coast. So meanwhile, I'm not here's another thing, I'm not living there anymore. You can interpret that any way you want, but I'm no longer living in my house. So suffice to say, I'm still paying close to $3,000 a month in with two mortgages.
Yeah,
In a house that I don't even live in anymore.
Yeah,
but you know what?
Just to keep fucking propane in the tank is $500 every three and a half weeks, and it just goes right out the windows and doors. I mean, I can just—it's freezing in this place all the time. It makes me sick to just. I might as well just go outside, take a big trash bag full of money, and throw it up in the air and laugh and dance a jig while it blows away.
Yeah.
For all the good it's doing me to stay in this place. I want Peanut to have, a big fat college fund and a nest egg if something were to happen to me instead of a fucking Farm of Doom that
she
couldn't possibly, manage by herself. And fuck it. Just fuck it all.
You just got to tear it down. You got to tear it down and start over again.
Yeah. And that's why I was hoping for a massive national teardown.
Exactly.
That reset. And not because I want people. It sounds like a horribly dickish thing to say, and I don't want anybody to suffer. But we need an attitudinal adjustment in this country. A big one. A massive paradigm shift. When the President of the United States can stand in front of a joint session of Congress and say, we need to invest in high-speed rail, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives can't be asked to applaud that, there's something seriously wrong. Right. You know, yeah, oh, boo, high-speed rail.
Yeah.
Boo, effective lower emissions transportation for people. Boo. What the fuck is the matter with people?
Yeah, yeah.
If that's something to be scoffed at, government investment in high-speed rail, mm-hmm. and the speaker of the orange nacho cheese flavored colored speaker of the house
right.
can't be bothered to applaud?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
You're like right in the, you've got to be at the low water mark right now because you just got smacked in the face with shit out of your septic tank. So I want to assure you from where I'm sitting, and I'm coming up to the tail end of all of this bullshit. So I'm almost out of it. I could not be happier. I am just thrilled
with
the way things are now. And because I've downsized, I got rid of a bunch of shit, I've got all this stuff resolved. It's kind of mostly behind me, and I feel outstanding. I feel great.
Yeah. Well, once I'm out of here and, you know, I've secured new digs and I'm paying a reasonable rental and you know, there's a roof over Peanut's head, I will feel that way as well. You know,
yeah.
Your Peanut is safely in college and she's 18 and
yeah.
there's, you know, mine's going to be 9 in 9 days. So,
yeah.
You know, there's still some worry, but the overall idea, especially now that the Dookie removal system is starting to fail me, the general idea is that the laughing Tom Hanks character from Money Pit was the right way to go.
Yeah.
You know, I went about it badly. And not, I don't want our listeners to think that I'm just a financial disaster. I made $20,000 less last year than I made the year before. So all my projections during the refi and everything else were on paper solid. They were sound because my income has never, ever in the 8 years that I've worked for the company I work for has never declined ever. Mm. It's always just steadily gone up, usually by quite a bit. And I took a huge hit last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just didn't, I mean, 20, that's a substantial whack. You know, it's a fifth of the total expected take home. So, I just now the Farm of Doom can suck it. The town can suck it. The town is full of miserable dicks and bitches. If anyone listens, I don't know, maybe the mailman, because, I get stuff to my house that is addressed to Elvis Dingledean, so maybe somebody in town has found it. But really, the town is just full of hideous, horrible, douchey, awful people, and they can all suck it. And if they're listening now, you know, fuck you. Thanks for making us so miserable for 8 years. You know, suck it hard. And I can't wait to get out of here. I'm going to move to Iowa. So we'll have to get Buzz to change the bumper because I'm moving to Iowa.
That's right. Well, I mean, I'm in the same boat where I have actually worked steadily. In fact, the most steadily I've ever worked. I mean, I've been constantly in the process of producing one cartoon or another. I mean, in amongst all that stuff, I wrote a book. I mean, for God's sake, it hasn't been as if. But you know what? It was that the crash was so significant and had such an impact on my psyche in terms of just, you know what, screw this. I'm not ever doing this again. Yeah. That it was, you know, I made that decision just as you have to just tear the rest of it down.
Tear it down.
And rebuild. And yeah. That's it. And that's the motivating aspect of all of this.
There's a scene in The Fifth Element where Gary Oldman's character, Zorg or whatever his name was, is talking to the priest guy, and he knocks something over off. He knocks something off his desk. He says, you know, order is nice and neat, but it doesn't create anything. And he knocks something off his desk and it breaks, and all these little robots and things come out. And he says, now look at this, out of chaos, look at all the little busy things that are happening. And it's like out of chaos, you know, the things will start happening in chaos. And I don't want to use the trite Chinese proverb. You know, there's a great Simpsons line where Lisa says, did you know the Chinese use the same word for crisis as they do for opportunity? And Homer says, yeah, crisitunity. Crisitunity.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can't be any worse than the Farm of Doom. So
well, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, and then going back to what I was saying just a second ago, there are a shitload of people. I mean, millions of people who have it far worse than I do. I can guarantee that because, like I said, I've continued to work. I mean, I've continued to generate an income stream where I've actually been able to, you know, to a certain degree, keep up with my bills and pay the mortgage and so forth. And a lot of people aren't in that situation, and they've got small children, and they've got, you know, and they're out of a job, and they're facing, you know, being kicked out of their house, and not by choice even, because, you know, I mean, you're lucky in that you're kind of orchestrating this yourself. You've kind of got, you're kind of driving it, but, I think in a lot of senses.
I hate the town. Yeah. I hate the house. I hate the school. I've got no equity built up, really, to speak of. So there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
There's no obvious reason to stay in this little one-horse shithole town. Yeah. And when, you know, and I feel like I'm doing Peanut a disservice, raising her here. Yeah. So, you know, it just crash the system. Just crash it hard.
And neither of us intended to talk about this, by the way.
No, I was just covered in shit 20 minutes ago, so I might as well, you know, unburden my soul. I've got to call somebody tomorrow and have them come out and tell me where the dookie goes, because I just don't know. I had my brother-in-law stand down at the far end of the property and yell into my culvert, and I could hear him yelling from the pipe that was overflowing. So, in other words, there's a standpipe, there's a sewage pipe, the same pipe that the snake came out of with the shit tip that hit me in the face. That pipe, you can hear noise out on the highway through that pipe. That means that pipe doesn't go anywhere that it should. So that's what I mean by I don't know where the dookie goes, because there's this pipe that carries – that when you put a snake down it, about 30 feet in, you hit shit. I don't know where that pipe goes, and you can hear the highway through that pipe. That you can hear people talking, like telephone, like the old game with the can and the string. That pipe obviously doesn't go where it's supposed to go, which in a rural area like this, it should go into a fucking septic tank.
Yeah.
And you can't hear somebody talk through a septic tank. So I'm very confused. And if I'm going to go through my contract, and if it doesn't say anything about that, I may have a lawsuit on my hand. Like, I could sue somebody, the real estate company and the former owners, for selling me a place with substandard sewage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably,
that would be great. How about we settle out of court? You give me a couple, you know, you give me $50,000 and I won't clean your fucking clocks for selling me a place where the dookie goes wrong.
If you haven't had that septic tank drained in 7 years, that dookie is going to either the storm sewer or it's going to a nearby river.
Mm, hell no. For the first 3 years, I didn't know I had a septic tank.
Oh, no.
So I didn't even treat it with the Ridex for the first 3 years.
Oh, God.
Because when I bought the place, the guy said, oh, yeah, we don't think you have a septic tank. We think it goes, like, in pipes, and then it goes out into the cornfield over there. And I'm like, oh, well, whatever. I figure that's just normal for Mayberry, right? I don't think that's normal.
At some point, didn't
my
you
brother-in-law
smell?
Was like, there's no way they could have gotten that to code. There's no way when they built the addition they could have gotten anybody in the county to sign off on that if that's what it does. And that's what it does, because he can yell into that pipe and I can hear him in my basement.
Oh, God.
I mean, he's literally a football field away down in a goal in the culvert and just talking normally, and I can hear his voice coming out of a pipe in the basement of my house. That's not normal.
No,
Bob.
It's not. No, it's not.
And that,
it's,
that's not
it's,
normal.
It's actually quite
and
dangerous.
That's where the dookie goes.
Yeah.
That's if you put something down that pipe and bring it out and it hits you in the face, it smells like Duke.
Yeah.
So that's not normal.
It's,
and
you
if
know,
it doesn't say in my contract, P.S., Mr. Dingledane, the house you bought, the dookie goes into the field across the street, so good luck with that. I'm suing somebody. I'm fucking suing somebody for selling me a house where with an unlicensed dookie disposal system.
So, I mean, it's a miracle that you haven't been killed from sewer gas coming up through your toilets.
Yeah, methane. Goddamn right.
Yeah.
You're right. I have a feeling if I lit a match right near that thing, it'd be like Cousin Eddie in fucking Christmas Vacation.
Shitter's full.
Blow half the shitter's full.
Shitter's full.
Yeah, I think my shitter's full shitter's on the north full. Side of that.
Right.
Oh, it's a pleasant
good.
Conversation.
But out of the Price is Right loser horn, you know, comes Price is Right, you know, opportunity.
That's right. Yeah. I'll take door number three. Bob.
That's exactly right.
Let's
well,
take a
so
deal. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Now that you've got sewage gunk, you know, on your face and probably infecting your brain at this point, it's no better time to break out your favorite soap.
I used my Michelle Bachmann soap to clean up. So the girls, the ladies need to tell me if that's antibacterial or not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis program. With Bob and Elvis, the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show, brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. The finest soap you will ever purchase ever. I swear to God, I have this. They sent this a bar of soap that looks like a hibiscus flower. I swear to God, this is the greatest soap that has ever graced my grubby hands.
Wow.
I mean, I look forward to going into the bathroom and washing my hands because, oh yeah, that's right, I've got that great Bubble Genius hibiscus soap. I'm just going to scrub away with that because it not only does it smell incredible, but it actually feels good to rub that soap over my hands.
Wow, you're just a soap nerd.
I've absolutely become a soap nerd. Oh, good Lord!
They need to make you a custom made. Soap vagina, and you can just love this. You love this soap so much.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting now one to arrive.
You will get a soap vagina.
Priority mail tomorrow.
Yeah. Introducing Michelle Bachmann with her State of the Ablution address.
I'd like to speak to you about soap. It may look innocent enough, but I have a chart here that shows Bubble Genius is completely responsible for the $30.9 trillion deficit. Normally, I'm against regulation, but this Bubble Genius company is literally run by communists, which is unconstitutional. Our founding fathers didn't tell the Germans to bomb Pearl Harbor so some vegan soap company could make a soap that looks like me. And they make their soap from razor blades and dryer lint. They say they're vegan, but you'll see my chart shows that they have meat orgies at least twice a week. Bubble Genius also practices the anti-Christian, anti-American act of voodoo on a doll that looks like me. Imagine! That's why I propose a law that says Bubble Genius must sign a loyalty oath to protect our liberty and our Constitution.
And now for the Bubble Genius rebuttal.
Dude, she's crazy. Come to our website, see what we're about. www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Yeah. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Oh, that was great. That was exactly, yeah. I mean, that was exactly like Michelle Bachmann. Oh, my God, brilliant. Genius, in fact.
So, State of the Union.
Yeah. And so, getting back to the original point, the recovery is going to be slow and steady, and Paul Ryan thinks that everything is god-awful, and the reason he's doing that is to suggest that once we really start to feel the economic recovery, the Republicans are going to take credit for it. That's what he's setting up. He's saying everything is terrible now, and because we're now in office, just that the very nature of the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives is going to, you know, create this whole economic recovery, right. and
which is why Obama comes out, you know, calling their bluff on this spending freeze.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, let's do it, bitches. You're in now. You got all the power. Let's do it. Not a single earmark for anybody. Total spending freeze. Suck it.
Yeah,
and we'll, you know, let roll the dice and take your chances, you dicks.
For 5 years, he said.
Yeah, my ass.
No earmarks. No discretionary spending for 5 years. It'll never ever pass. And then the Republicans. I mean, he's tossing a psycho bomb into the Republican Party. I mean, that's exactly what he's doing. Oh, sorry. So we can't say bomb anymore. We can't use violent rhetoric. Sorry. Anyway, so that's exactly what he's doing. He's going to draw a huge rift between the Republicans, the Republican establishment, and the Tea Party, because on one hand, the Republicans are giving lip service to the Tea Party by suggesting that they want to freeze, they want to cut spending, they want to reduce the deficit, do all these things that are really kind of impossible given the fact that to eliminate earmarks would screw them with their home districts.
Oh, sure.
So they're stuck.
Everybody, it's you know, you only hate the other guy's earmarks. You love your own earmarks.
Yeah.
Those are, you know, it's the other guy's earmarks are fucking crazy, but mine are gold.
That's right. In fact, I think Michelle Bachmann was trying to make that distinction that, you know, funding the roads in her district. Oh, that's not pork. That's definitely not pork.
No.
No.
Funding the roads in District 4, that's pork.
That's absolutely pork.
District 6, I'll take me some of that good road pork.
That ain't investment. That's spending. Spending's bad. We can't have spending. It's awful. Except in my district. Except that. Yeah. Please keep it coming.
Yeah. That's an investment in the good, the fine people who will continue to elect that stupid ass.
So they're screwed. The Republicans are utterly screwed now because if they got
nowhere to go. He's completely boxed them in.
I know.
He completely, and while the progressives go, he can put his fucking feet up and go, yeah. But they got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
They got nowhere to go. Yeah. If they block him on this freeze, then he can go around in 2012 and go, yeah, I tried. I tried to cap this shit off, and the Republicans who control the House now, they said, no.
They didn't want to do it.
Get it? They didn't want to do it. So I gave them their tax cuts. I gave them their, you know, I extended their Bush tax cuts. I just can't wait for the ads. I cannot wait for the ads. Mm-hmm. They're such clowns. I mean, this guy is a policy uber wonk. Super duper wonk, and guys like Boehner are playing fucking jacks, you know, mm-hmm. while he's playing three-dimensional Star Trek chess.
Yeah,
I love it. I was underwhelmed by the speech. The whole tone, mood and energy of it was completely off.
Well, you know what it was colloquial. I mean, it was like the first Obama address that was like almost like there were some places that were just almost conspicuously casual and jokey.
Have a lot of gravitas.
Yeah, and but jokey in a bad way.
Yeah, like that airplane joke?
Airplane joke.
I was like, thank God there hadn't been a recent airline crash because that would have gone over pretty well.
Yeah.
That was bad, and the whole thing about salmon. And
salmon.
Like, dude, this is State of the Union. Let's class it up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know who punched up that script, but they did an awful, awful job. If you missed it, and I don't know how you could possibly be hearing this show and have missed the State of the Union, but, I mean, I think the thing was he was talking about cutting the deficit or cutting the budget in order to reduce the deficit, and then he turned it into a metaphor about an airplane. Like, you can if you need to lose some weight on the airplane, you don't want to cut off the engines.
Yeah.
Right?
Because you'll feel it when it... Yeah, it was just a really 10-ear joke, I mean, which is also very unusual for him. But it was also – it wasn't so much – I mean, he really can't give a bad speech, I don't think.
No.
But the pacing was ponderous. I mean, it really could have tightened up. I mean, talk about pregnant pauses. The applause lines are fucking annoying, first of all, just in general, just in any in any State of the Union, all applause lines are annoying, no matter which side is right and wrong. I just think that's retarded. But also, I think the way they split the crowd up, or the way there were these little pockets of, you know, it wasn't left chamber, right chamber, you know, left and right and blue and red. The whole energy of the room was just off. It was just weird. I was really kind of I was bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
And you know, the message was fine. The words were all right. I think Lawrence O'Donnell had it right on the wrap up that, you know, he wasn't really sure what he said. You know, I wanted a little more. I wanted a real ass kicking. You know, I wanted a real foot in the nuts kind of speech, where the next day you're just like, God damn, President Obama kicked our asses last night. Like, made me feel like a girl. You know, just I wanted to be shamed a little bit. But I'm still waiting for the second inaugural. That's the speech I want to hear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it might be because you and I might be a little have skewed expectations compared to regular people. Because all I heard afterwards was how this speech totally connected with regular people. I mean, what was it? 91% of people who surveyed in that snap poll right after the speech agreed with what the president was saying and liked the speech. I mean, it's like 91%. That's like the results of an Ed Schultz text poll. That's every Ed Schultz text poll. Well, tell us what you think, America. 91% of you said Obama is awesome and how the Republicans are stupid. That's 9%.
That's a pretty good Ed Schultz. He sounded like something of a dullard last night. He was on the – I don't know if you watched the MSNBC wrap-up.
Yeah.
It was him and O'Donnell and Matt Tweedy and what's his name from the Eugene Robinson and Rachel. And everything Ed said just sounded like fucking Tommy Boy. it's like a great panel of political commentators and Tommy Boy. Uh-huh. Chris Farley. It's just like, dude, you're a little out of your weight class tonight, Ed.
If you missed it, this is Chris Matthews, who really has been on fire lately. I mean, talk about someone who's stepped up his game in the last couple of years. I think it's been Chris Matthews on that network. And he, when Michelle Bachmann delivered this speech in Iowa, in which she completely, and we'll play that first, when she completely botches history, I mean, in every conceivable way, he just lays into her. Let's start with the Michelle Bachmann clip here.
Do you realize it's been 21 generations that America has survived? For 21 nations, we've passed the torch of liberty from one generation successfully to the next.
And
the
question we need to ask
ourselves tonight is
21
this.
Nations, is that what she said?
She said for 21 nations. What the fuck does that even mean?
Right.
21 nations?
You know what? And this is going to keep happening as long as they want to play the teleprompter meme. Because, I mean, she's reading prepared remarks off of notes on her podium because she doesn't want to use a prompter because the prompters are suddenly bad. Prompters are for socialists or something. Yeah. Right.
Evil robots.
Right. So they screw up their words. But this is what she does really seriously screw up here. It's unforgivable.
Will it end with us? Will we be that last generation? Will we be the first generation to fail to pass that torch of liberty? It doesn't seem like a very positive message, does it? But I have to ask you, will we be the ones for whom this great experiment in human liberty will end on our watch? We know there was slavery that was still tolerated when the nation began. We know that was an evil, and it was a scourge and a blot and a stain upon our history. But we also know that the very founders that wrote those documents worked tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States. And I think it is high time that we recognize the contribution of our forebears who worked tirelessly. Men like John Quincy Adams, who would not rest until slavery was extinguished in the country.
Yeah,
you know what I think? I think she had just watched Amistad.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, she like on the plane over, maybe somebody says, oh, you ought to watch this. It got Anthony Hopkins. It's awesome. It's called Amistad. And she's like, oh, John Quincy Adams is like, oh, okay, I'm going to talk about that shit.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. The signers of those documents, right? That's what she said. The men who signed those documents. So that would be the Declaration and the Constitution. John Quincy Adams was John Adams's son, so I don't think he was anywhere around signing any of those. What the fuck is she talking about?
I don't know. John Quincy Adams.
But they worked tirelessly.
Yeah. Yeah, they worked tirelessly to eradicate slavery, even though most of them owned slaves.
Yeah. And, well, none of the Adamses did, but...
No, of course not.
But John Quincy Adams, if I'm not mistaken, died in the late 1840s. I'm going to say 1845, let's say 46. Pretty much, I'm pretty sure on the old timeline, that's pre-Civil War. So I don't think he had jackass shit to do with ending slavery.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah.
And, plus, he didn't sign anything.
What did I hear today? I overheard a story about George Washington in particular. After the Battle of Yorktown, several of his slaves had actually fled Mount Vernon. And taken refuge with the British, and Washington reclaimed those slaves and sent them back to Mount Vernon.
Nice.
Yeah.
So nice he ain't guy. Going anywhere, bitches. Yeah. I got cotton to plant.
Who's my favorite founding father? All of them. Sarah Palin.
Why are you asking, Sean? in what respect, Sean?
Yeah. Well, that was the famous Glenn Beck interview with Sarah Palin. Well, who's your favorite founding father?
I don't know. All of them.
And he's like, no, I'm not going to let you get away with that. And she's scrambling. Oh, George Washington.
George Washington, that's right.
Mm. But it's funny. It to me, I mean, the conversation that Bachman was having, that speech that she was giving, it didn't require – the first point didn't require the second, right? Mm-hmm. She was talking about the awesomeness of America and how for 21 generations we've survived, and yet we survived the Civil War, and yet we're not going to survive a Democratic president, but her first point had nothing to do with the second. It's like teabaggers have, because they dote so much on the Constitution and the founders, they have this guilt complex where they feel like they have to explain themselves. So she has to, I can't go all Constitution. I can't go all founding father without mentioning slavery. So I'm going to preempt the liberal argument against me and come out and just verbal diarrhea all this stuff about the founders and how they worked tirelessly to end slavery. The guys that signed that document. It's like having a guilty conscience to me.
Yeah.
It's like she knows she's so full of shit, so she's got to segue into this whole slavery thing. And that's what Chris Matthews just fixates on that one point and won't let that teabagger get off the hook. It was kind of unfair to the teabagger because, yeah. I mean, Michelle Bachman didn't need to say all that stuff, and it wasn't her main point. But Chris was just furious at this point. He's just like, that's just so ahistorical.
He's furious.
So he just dogged that guy.
Exactly. He's furious at Rousseau. But he's also furious about the fact that all of these guys, as soon as they're challenged on this ridiculousness, on this obvious misinterpretation of history, they never explain themselves. They say, "Well, you know what? I misspoke. I meant to say that so and so, Lincoln was the first Republican president, and he freed the slaves." Or so, some sort of backpedal out of it.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, they keep going. They keep moving forward.
Yeah.
With this nincompoopery, and they don't stop. And that's what Chris Matthews is trying to get to the bottom of.
I don't know what to make of that, Sal. That's balloonhead. That's not what our history was founded on. We founded on a constitution which includes treating slaves as three-fifths of a person. It went on all the way to the Civil War. We had compromise after compromise trying to avoid a war. We went to war and lost 600,000 people in the worst catastrophe in our history because slavery continued through the 1860s and only ended because of that war. And here's this woman you've made your spokesperson saying that somehow the founding fathers dealt with it. That's the one thing they did not deal with. That was the horrible compromise that was at the heart of our Constitution. Why do you put someone like this forward who is a balloon head who knows no American history?
This is the second great little thing that Matthews has coined recently. Because
balloon head.
Because when Sarah Palin was talking about or delivered her response to Tucson.
Yeah.
He said, he comments and says, "Why is Sarah Palin always popping off like that? Why does she always pop off?" I love that. Why is Sarah Palin popping off? And that's exactly what she does. It perfectly defines sort of this knee-jerk reaction that she always orchestrates, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook, or in that case, it was a video response, or it was actually delivered on Facebook. It was posted on Facebook. She's always just popping off. She doesn't think. She doesn't consider what she's about to do. Right. Because she finds herself to be infallible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Messianic. I mean, yeah, exactly. She literally has – I think she has a biblical savior sort of complex.
Mm-hmm.
And she's infallible, absolutely.
She's popping off. She's popping off. Here we go. We can continue with this Matthews thing because he's really going to – lay it on this guy. Yeah,
he really does. This poor guy. And we should mention that he's grilling the head – of the Tea Party Nation or whatever, the Tea Party Express.
Tea Party Express.
Sponsored, for whom Bachman was speaking last night. That's who he said.
And we should also clarify who was the chairman of the Tea Party Express? Your favorite guy.
Oh, that fucking guy. Mark, uh, what's his last name?
Oh, shit. I forgot.
Mark. Oh, that guy's such an ass. But they fired him.
Yeah, they fired him.
Because he was such a fucking jackass.
Total racist.
I used to love tearing that guy up on Twitter. Yeah. Now I can't remember his last name.
I can't remember his name either.
I saw him in Omaha. What a fucking douchebag.
We've talked about this guy at length. I mean, you know, I mean, Sarah Palin's taking money from this guy. Michelle Bachmann's still working.
They love each other.
Working at Tea Party Express. I mean, and this guy is one of the most notorious racists of our time.
Mark Williams.
Yeah, Mark Williams. There you go.
Yeah. Just
Mark Williams, the Tea Party Express. And that's, that's where this guy's from. This guy's from the Tea Party Express.
From Tea Party Express, yeah. But it's not Mark Williams. It's another guy.
Right. Wait, let's continue with this tape.
It's a ridiculous decision you guys have made. Do you know how little this woman knows about our history?
I think Michelle Bachmann is been one of the best.
Did you just hear that stuff? Did you just hear her? You want to play it again? We can rub it in, Sal. It's horrendous. What do you make of it?
I heard what you said. But
what's she talking about?
I heard it. I heard it.
It's just like, yeah, you got me. Oh, it's painful. One of the best members of Congress. Are you kidding me? What has she ever done?
One of the best members of Congress.
Did you just hear her? You want me to play it again? We could rub it in, Sal. It's horrendous. What do you make?
What do you make of it?
What's she talking about?
She's trying. I think what'd
you say?
That's just the impotent white guy laugh. You know, that's the laugh he rolls out when his wife is just kicking his ass. You know, like, oh, you're such a slob. You're such an ass. You can't do anything right. And he's just impotent white guy. Giggle.
Play it again. We can rub it in, Sal. It's horrendous. What do you mean? What's she talking about?
She's trying. I think what she's talking about is that we cannot continue to spend money as recklessly as we have
done. That's not what she just said. What? She said the founding fathers got rid of slavery. Why would you say that? Why, every high school kid has been to Mount Vernon and seen the slave quarters. What are you talking? Jefferson had slaves. All those guys had slaves. I know they were great men in other regards, but they never got rid of slavery.
You know, I love when he gets when Chris Matthews really starts going. And he gets so wrapped up in what he's about to say that he's not finishing his sentence. You know what he's talking about?
He's just going to do this. What's he going to do? Every kid
of sleep for just so flustered by the stupidity. And I know we have all been there. We've all been to that point where you just go, what the fuck are you doing? Oh, my God. What did Sarah Palin just say?
Like Uncle Buck. In Uncle Buck, when he's trying to argue with his girlfriend on the phone, would you just, can I? he's just totally flustered. As bombastic as he is and as flamboyant and as, you know, spittle ridden and everything, he's a very smart guy.
Yeah,
I mean, Matthews. He knows his history. He was a speechwriter for Carter. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been in politics a long time. He really knows what he's talking about. And I got nothing but respect for him. I got to see him a little bit at the Ted Sorensen Memorial because he belonged to a speechwriting club that got together. I just wish to be a fly on the wall. It's like a group of D.C. speechwriters who get together like every 3 or 4 months, and Ted Sorensen was always the leader of that group. Mm-hmm. So that's why Tweety was there. But I got nothing but respect for Tweety. So
yeah,
kicking this guy's ass.
Right. And the thing that I respect the most about Chris Matthews is the fact that is his enthusiasm for politics.
Now, sometimes you can tell he just loves politics.
Exactly, and so that is something that I really relate to him about. But the thing that where he starts to lose me is when that enthusiasm turns to sort of almost like a game of sports kind of mentality, where you know it's like politics is sports and it's portrayed that way, and that's where I sometimes go, this is really frustrating, and I wish he would stop it. But most of the
time, Maddow is the perfect mix of enthusiasm and relativism and just calm, you know, like Maddow is just the ultimate wonk and just totally focused. And you can tell she loves politics too. She's really good at it, but she doesn't have any of that bombast and none of that guy stuff.
Well, that's the thing about Chris Matthews is part of the transformation of the last couple of years. And I think part of this has to do with that he's inspired by this new, and he's such a Kennedy file. I think he's inspired by Barack Obama, and he wants to take things more seriously now in terms of its impact. So politics, yeah. I think what's given Chris Matthews some depth is that I think he believes that now, I think now more than he did for the 8 years of the Bush administration, I think he's offering it more deference in terms of, well, there's a real impact on real people when these decisions are made. It's not just a game. It's not just a sports competition, which when you make that analogy, it devalues the impact of politics and almost separates the human aspect of all of it, where these decisions aren't just idle trickery and gamery. It's that they really have that they mean something. Where you know, if someone votes against a stimulus package, that it affects people's ability to get a job, and it affects people's ability to earn money. And I think, yeah, I mean, I guess it would be a combination of him being inspired by Obama and also him understanding the nature of this recession.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those
things. Didn't he write a book that Jon Stewart kind of shit on him about politics? Wasn't it Chris Matthews who wrote a book that was all about how it's a game?
Life is a game.
And he went on The Daily Show, and Jon Stewart kind of tore him up about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think he has changed his attitude quite a bit.
Right.
I think you're right.
Yeah. I'm trying to frantically look up the name of the book, but it doesn't really matter. I'll get back to this tape, because he really hasn't even gotten into it yet.
It's right in the Constitution, and here's this woman waving the Constitution around, powing around with Scalia, and she doesn't even know what the Constitution had in it. The treatment of slaves, African Americans, as three-fifths of people. That's in our history. You can't take it out. Explain to me what this woman's talking about.
I think she's just using that as an illustration to point out that
I think Americans are concerned today.
What do you mean, sir?
That was my favorite line. When I was watching that live, that's what made me just double over laughing. What do you mean, sir?
What do you mean, sir? We need Anderson Cooper does this a lot, where he just comes out and asks, what do you mean by that? Explain yourself. And they never will. I mean, it's just one feedback loop after another. That's what we need, just constant repetitive, what do you mean by – what does that mean? Explain that to me.
Yeah, that's what he gets into.
Matthews will just never let you answer. Even if the guy had an answer, it just won't let you answer.
Yeah.
But, you know, Anderson Cooper holds their fucking feet to the fire these days.
Yeah.
That's what we need. You know, just what do you mean? What does that mean?
Sir?
Explain. On both sides of the aisle. Right. I don't want to hear any mouthy bullshit from either side of the, you know, from either party.
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean. What does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And outside of the soundbite.
And the reason he gets into that and he tries to go down that path is because it leads to a certain point that he makes later, which is that, you know, all these Tea Party guys are running off a tape. And as he literally says, it's like running off a tape. It's like an 8-track loop.
Yeah.
Right. But just not, just, whatever you ask them, they're just going to press play. And let that go. And then this guy, you know, in his defense, peppers it in with the but the rest of it's just off a tape.
Their children and grandchildren are not going to have the same opportunities of the American dream because we've increased our debt.
Why are you talking like this? You're talking like her. That's how she talks. She goes on this tape. Yeah. No matter what you ask her, she goes on a tape. I want to ask you about slavery, sir. Sal, you know when slavery ended. It ended with the Civil War, right?
Well,
so uncomfortable.
I know,
you know,
really
there's no way this guy knows anything about history. He's just an idiot,
right?
Who's just caught. I mean, yeah, everybody knows, you know, slavery, Civil War, but dates, places, times, people, just totally clueless. So right now his brain is in, like, total overload. Like, oh God, I hope he doesn't ask me, you know, a specific question.
Why are you hedging?
I'm not hedging on it. I'm saying that
when did slavery end in America? When did it become illegal? When did the 13th Amendment get passed?
Well, sure. I mean, that's a different question from when we've had to deal with our racial issues.
The simple question to you, sir, and I know you have an
issue.
When did we end? She said slavery ended under the Founding Fathers.
I don't think that's what she meant. I mean, I think she meant that if we don't get control of our government now, the
you're covering. You made a terrible decision. You put a person out there that has no concept of American history. I'm reminded of what Steve Schmidt said about Sarah Palin. She doesn't know anything. This is worse. This is claiming something that never
happened. There was a nah. It's like that Affleck commercial. With the goat eating the paper, you see him goes nah. This guy just
nah. Just this sort of self. Yeah, I know you caught me.
What do you say? What do you say to this? Clearly, this is inexplicable. There's no way to punch my way out of this paper bag.
Exactly. Poor guy. But yeah, Matthew's got to complete. You know, why put this person in particular? Or if you're going to put her up. You know, after the State of the Union, at least shut her up for a couple months beforehand so you don't have tape like that.
Yeah.
You know, to her credit, John Quincy Adams was an anti-slavery guy. I mean, he was sort of the antipode, the opposite number of John Calhoun at the time, who was, you know, Calhoun was all about the slavery, loved him some slavery. To her credit, that part's true. Just that John Quincy Adams was anti-slavery, but he wasn't a founder. I mean, he was the son of a founder, but he didn't sign any documents. So what the fuck?
Yeah.
Just pulling it completely out of her ass. It's like some staffer handed her some notes, you know, at the last, if you need to talk about founders, John Quincy Adams, you know, just slip the Quincy in there. No one knows the difference.
Right.
They're all the same.
You mentioned Anderson Cooper here before. Let's hear Anderson Cooper's smarmy intro. The same story.
We begin, though, as always, keeping them honest, with some startling new comments by Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann about American history. Comments that are either a deliberate rewriting of our history or signs she has a shaky grasp on our history.
Which is Anderson Cooper speak for. She's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, yeah. Public officials shouldn't be allowed to go out and say things like that. I mean, it's just so purpose. He's right. There's only two choices here. It's either she's lying, you know, purposefully lying and obfuscating to suit her political needs, or she's a fucking idiot. Yeah. Either way, those two things are not compatible with public service. At that level where she is being paid or, you know, whatever the situation was that she was given that speech. It was in Iowa, wasn't it? I mean, it was a pretty serious event.
It was in Iowa, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
please God, run for president. Yeah. You're stupid.
Well, that's why she's in Iowa. You don't go to Iowa unless you're getting ready to throw your hat in the ring. I mean, that's exactly what she's doing. And it's going to be awesome. But
God.
This is all part of, and I'm glad that they're starting to talk about it now, but they should have started to talk about this a couple of years ago where, for example, people like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin and Jonah Goldberg, who's responsible for all of it, conflating liberalism with Nazism. Mm-hmm. Somehow liberalism is in the same area of the political or ideological spectrum as fascism. When it's not, it's not. It's absolutely not. That's a big lie. Huge lie. Yeah. And just entirely fabricated. It's not. Conservatism has much more in common with fascism. Not to say that conservatism, American conservatism, has anything or is like fascism. Right. It's not. I'm not saying that, but it's right. That's.
But ideologically, they're closer.
Ideologically, they're closer. Liberalism is on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
they don't know this, or they do know it, and they're just deliberately deceiving their people. Sarah Palin, and we've talked about this on the show before, so we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this. But Sarah Palin repeatedly, time after time after time, and it's in print. It hasn't been expunged from the record. It's still there. Sarah Palin repeatedly confusing the preamble to the Constitution with the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing where unalienable is featured.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a common teabagger trick. I see that everywhere.
Yeah.
Pulling things out of the Declaration of Independence as if that's a governing document, you know, as if it's something, you know, binding and law, you know, something in our legal code.
Right.
It's just a common, you know, teabagger dog whistle. Just used words, used phrases that people, you know, that Mark Williams asshole pulled something out of the Pledge of Allegiance. basically snaked some lines out of the Pledge of Allegiance into a conversation he was having about the Constitution.
Right.
And everybody at the rally was nodding their heads, oh, right, one nation under God. Doesn't say that anywhere in the Constitution. That's the Pledge of Allegiance, you douchebags.
Right.
But he rolled it right into the Constitution, made people think, oh, yeah, one nation under God. That's in the Constitution. No, it's not. The word God doesn't appear anywhere in the Constitution, ever. Right.
And speaking of which, Congressman Paul Brown, who's become just sort of he's starting to kind of rise to that level, that sort of Virginia Fox, Michelle Bachmann, wingnut,
Steve King,
that Steve King level of just being an absolute fucking wingnut.
Yeah. Spaz.
Yeah.
I mean, just spaz. Just like they can't control the things that come out of their mouth. Just spazzy white guy.
And so he tweets during the State of the Union last night, he tweets something to the effect of the president doesn't believe in the Constitution. The president believes in socialism.
Mm-hmm. Hey!
And again, it's an indication of the fact that these guys, even though they're elected members of the United States Congress, so it's just staggering. Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, you know what? You can kind of give her a pass for being a fucking moron when it comes to the Constitution.
She's a half-term governor
of Alaska.
You know, the biggest socialist state in the Union.
And she doesn't even have to reference the Constitution to do that job.
Right.
Or does even do what she's doing now. She ought to, but she doesn't. But a guy like Paul Brown or Michelle Bachmann, these guys ought to know it forward and backward. I mean, after all, they read it on the floor of the House of Representatives a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The whole thing, soup to nuts.
If they looked at Article 1, Section 8, they'd realize that, you know, the Constitution calls for the levying of taxes, the redistribution of wealth in order to provide for the general welfare. The word welfare is literally in the Constitution. Article 1.
Yep.
And
that's not what they meant.
Yeah, but you can't believe in the Constitution and believe in socialism at the same time. And the president clearly doesn't believe in socialism either.
Yeah, I mean, show me one thing. Right, it's completely antithetical. You know, completely averse to the record, to what he's actually doing. But it sounds good. Anybody still using that socialism meme at this point is just not paying attention.
Yeah. No.
Ugh.
And so, by the way, socialism is akin to fascism too. By the way, because they're socialist is in the the acronym for Nazi, or the Nazi is the acronym for National Socialist.
Right.
And which is the thing, the little ditty that I always go back to in response to that is just because socialism is in National Socialist is part of Nazism as in terms of the title of the party, is like saying that there are actual dogs and hot dogs.
Right. Well, like, we did see the Taco Bell news this week.
That's right.
You might be careful about that.
Oh, my God. Taco Bell. Good Lord.
But it's so delicious. I'll eat me some of that meat. Nobody that buys a 69-cent taco thinks that they're getting, you know, the good stuff. So I don't understand all the hoopla. It's no great surprise to me. I've seen the stuff. I look at it. It doesn't look like beef.
But I don't
understand.
Well,
I'll eat it. I love that shit.
Well, they tell you it's beef. I mean, it's not even according to this lawsuit, it's not even half beef.
Well, Taco Bell's fighting back. They say they start with pure, you know, USDA certified beef, and you know, I'm sure they're going to add stuff to it. But you know, as long as it's not killing anybody.
Well, they add stuff to all sorts of ground meat. I mean, all the meat you get at McDonald's, it's not all meat. Well, it's not all beef. It's not all the. It's not the muscle tissue. It's got all kinds of additional fillers in there that come from further and further outside the cow, closer and closer to the hide of the cow, right? And that's the material that is most often contaminated with, you know, things like salmonella and E. coli.
But when they put that, so they bleach it first. They soak it in bleach. So it's
ammonia.
Fine.
They soak ammonia. It in ammonia. They wash ammonia. It in a big washing machine. Have you seen
Food Inc.?
They actually show these machines.
Big pink slab.
That's right.
That's good for you. It's been washed in ammonia. Come on.
And have there been instances where that same meat has been contaminated? Yeah. Yeah. Well, so the ammonia is not even working.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's got to be some strong contaminant.
That's right. They're the attorneys in this lawsuit are calling it a meat mixture. That's being generous.
What cracks me up is that somebody somewhere had to go through the drive-thru with a video camera and like a fucking CPA and a notary public and order a big bag full of Taco Bell and videotape it all and then send it to some lab somewhere. That's what I love. That's I want to be the lab guy who gets the rush order for a legal, you know, a legal analysis of Taco Bell big beef burrito meat. You know, it just cracks me up. If I was that guy, I'd cut it in half, I'd analyze one half, and I'd eat the other half, man. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I lived off of Taco Bell in college.
Yeah.
Because it used to be cheap. You used to be able to fill yourself to stuffed, mm-hmm. like couldn't see straight for $5. I was one of the only freshmen in college that had a car because my little hipster doofus liberal arts college didn't usually let freshmen have cars, but I was 21 and they really couldn't tell me not to. Because I was an adult, and so I had a car, and we would make a Taco Bell run. My buddies would come in my dorm and say, "Run for the border," and we'd all go, "Run for the border," and we'd all drive up to this mall, this strip mall in Annapolis, where there was a Taco Bell. We'd just fucking stuff ourselves like kings for $5. Now $5 will barely buy you anything there, which is a shame.
And you know, when I was working at Domino's there at Kings Park Shopping Center in Fairfax. One thing that I used to do, I used to get off work at, you know, as late as even like 1 o'clock, because you close up Domino's and then you have to clean, like, because Domino's is run by Nazis. I mean, these are real Nazis who literally go around with white gloves and make sure. I mean, if you order from Domino's, I swear to God, this is a good thing. You order from Domino's, that food is fucking clean. I mean, that's coming from a clean fucking facility because they are insane. So we used to have to spend, you know, an hour and a half cleaning. I mean, scrubbing from stem to stern. Those that Domino's store. So you get off late, and I'm hungry. So where do I go? I go to Taco Bell. Get a 10-pack of tacos.
Oh hell yeah! 10-pack of tacos. Put them down one after the other, like that's a fucking assembly line.
Yeah, it was insane.
Nothing better.
It's a miracle we're still alive. But you know what?
It tastes so goddamn good.
I sound self-righteous now, but I was getting those 10 packs of tacos. But in my defense, I never once said, "Let's run for the border."
Well, they would go, "Let's run for the border," and they'd make the border. Stupid, you know, thumb and the pinkies out. Taco Bell used to have something called a Taco Bell Grande. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like a fucking 10-inch taco. It was a monster. I don't know why they don't have that anymore. I don't understand. Mm. I want my Taco Bell Grande back.
Yeah.
You talk about Nazis running Domino's. You remember Rolling Valley Mall on Old King Mill Road? Rolling Valley Mall?
Yeah.
There was a pizza place there, and there was this very diminutive Vietnamese gentleman who ran that pizza parlor at Rolling Valley Mall. I used to work at the Arrows across from it.
Yeah.
And I used to go to that pizza parlor and sit at that counter and order one slice and stare at that guy, because you know who that Vietnamese guy was?
Who?
That ran that fucking pizza place at Rolling Valley Mall, Old Key Mill in Burke, Virginia. He was the South Vietnamese general who shot that kid in the head in that picture.
No.
That was the guy. That was the guy that pulled the trigger on that kid.
Kidding me?
I am not shitting you. I would go and stare at that guy every day and couldn't believe it that he ran a pizza place.
And he's serving your pizza.
Yeah, serving pizza, and that's the guy that shot that kid. The picture that ended, you know, eventually ended the Vietnam War. I mean, the most recognizable, other than the little girl running with the napalm, other than that, it's the most memorable Vietnamese war picture. And the guy served me pizza every day.
And how did you discover this? I mean, how did you know that was the same guy? Is it up on the?
You can Google it now. And it's 100%. And he died of like lung cancer because he used to chain smoke Paul Malls. I remember he used to, and it would just. It looked exactly like him. I don't remember who told me that. Somebody I work with or somebody I knew said, "Hey, you know who that guy is, don't you?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "Yeah, it's like Pham Phuc Thong or whatever." I'm like, "Oh my God." Because my dad, you know, my dad was in Nam and my whole family, everybody, my uncle came back fucking insane because he was a tunnel rat. It was that guy. I used to eat pizza. I used to buy pizza from that guy.
I'm hardly believing you at this point.
I swear to fucking God it's true. Google it.
Okay.
First, you got to Google the picture so you get the guy's name. Long Duck Dong, whatever his name was. And then Google that. And there's like a Wikipedia article that says he ran a fucking pizza place in Burke. I'm not even shitting. Why would I make that up?
I don't know. But I mean, I swear to God, every week in and week out, we discover a new layer to your gumpness.
I can't help it that I used to buy fucking pizza from the guy that shot that kid. Oh, okay, here's the picture. I'm Googling now. Here's the photo. Website for this page. Oh, man, that's a horrible picture.
I mean,
you can actually, the guy that clipped that picture, you can actually see the bullet coming out the other side of the guy's head.
I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Did John F. Kennedy offer you like a Dr. Pepper at one point? I mean, I just got to know. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Wish.
Unbelievable, this guy. Just constantly.
Yeah, dude, roll the commercial and I will look this up. Go to commercial break.
And we are exclusively sponsored by Bubble Genius because this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. And that's the website address is bubblegenius.com. And you've got to go there and buy just armloads of soap because it is the finest, finest soap. And I'm not just saying that. The famous blogger, liberal blogger Matt Osborne says it too on Twitter. It is the bestest soap you will ever, ever purchase. And it's not just soap. I mean, you got soap in a variety of shapes and shapes and textures and fragrances, but also stuff like the Michelle Bachmann voodoo doll,
right?
Sarah Palin voodoo doll, Glenn Beck voodoo doll. I mean, really, what better time than to take out your frustrations with giant pins and needles and knives, but in the era of new civility? Because you know what? Fuck new civility. That's what I have to say about that.
Indeed.
And I'm not shy about it either. I think it's terrible. I think it's ridiculous. But nevertheless, Bubble Genius is quite incredible, quite awesome. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. This is the extra bonus here about Bubble Genius is not only is it excellent soap, but it's also vegan soap. I mean, it's really seriously done. All their packaging is recyclable. All their ingredients are sourced right near where they live. And that supports other local domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption. I mean, they actually make stuff. We were talking about earlier having a job where you can do something and see the results of it at the end of the day. That's what
yes.
they do. And you've got, I mean, and the fact that they're progressive is an extra bonus. We've got to support progressive businesses. And if you don't, I'm going to come to your house and I'm going to smack you. In the name of new civility, I'm going to smack you in the face with a leather glove. D'Artagnan.
Oh, Lord.
That's from Waiting for Guffman.
Yes.
They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. Yes, it is Bubble Genius Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
We are, once again, way late.
Fuck it.
We just love talking.
Look, I found this little fucker's obit in the New York Times.
Okay.
His name was Nguyen Ngoc Loan.
Mm-hmm.
L-O-A-N. He died. He was 67 when he died. The obit says Nguyen Ngoc Loan, 67, dies, semicolon, executed Viet Cong prisoner. Nguyen Ngoc Loan, the quick-tempered.
Quick-tempered,
Oh, he was quick-tempered.
Really?
Boy, the guy, just quick-tempered. You know, the way he would shoot guys in the fucking head right out
in front
street.
Of cameras. Right?
Yeah. The quick-tempered South Vietnamese national police commander, whose impromptu execution of a Viet Cong prisoner on a Saigon street in the Tet Offensive of 68 helped galvanize American public opinion against the war, died on Tuesday at his home in Burke, Virginia.
Oh,
he
my God.
He was 67 and operated a pizza parlor. Bam.
Ugh.
I ate pizza from that guy. The guy that shot that fucking kid in the head used to make me pizza. So suck it with your fucking Forrest Gump bullshit.
Yeah,
I just know people. And no, I knew the guy that shot that fucking kid. You probably bought a slice from that guy.
You're still Gump, though, regardless of whether it's true. I mean, you're still...
I'm a little more mentally advanced, but
I'm sure you are. But I mean, obviously, more mentally advanced. But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, when you grow up in Northern Virginia, there's all kinds of people. Like, you know, who was a coach on my baseball team when I was 12 years old? White House press secretary Larry Speaks. I mean,
wow.
I mean, literally changed like coached my batting stance, like how I stand at the plate. Larry Speaks, the guy who actually
for and Reagan?
Was yeah Reagan's press secretary was the coach of my basketball team. Who was the who's the director of national who's the director of national toast? The guy, he was kind of a military guy. Bush appointed him towards the end. Ah, shit. But regardless, I mean, his kid was like on my swimming team or something like that.
Really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you have all kinds of brushes with political celebrity. Last time I was there, last time I was in Washington for Thanksgiving, I sat in a diner near good Lord, I'm forgetting all these names now.
It was a million knock loan, was it?
It wasn't. No, it wasn't him.
He's dead.
Yeah, but I mean, I sat in a restaurant near Barry McCaffrey.
Oh,
Barry McCaffrey was sitting like
that's very
two
exciting.
Tables over. Yeah. Yeah.
That's my dad and his wife narrowly missed because they were out to dinner, but if they'd been home, they would have met the first grandma. They would have met Michelle Obama's mother because Betty Curry, President Clinton's exec, the one who kept the jizzy dress under her desk, brought her over to meet my dad and his wife, but they weren't home, so they missed the first grandma.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, so that's how. And I'm now personal. The real me, the non-Elvis me, is now close friends with Obama's number two speechwriter, the Sam Seaborn, if you will, because of a lovely gift that I sent him.
Number two, John Favreau. Is that what you're saying?
That's number one.
He's number one.
He's the director of the. Yeah, Favreau would be Toby, and this other guy, whose name I won't mention,
Sam
but
Seaborn.
he would be Sam.
You are totally. You're Gump. I swear to God, you're Gump.
Well, I met him at the – well, I mean, I saw him at the Sorensen thing, and then I sent him a little gift because his what he said, his eulogy thing, moved me so much. And he sent me this long email, and now we're buds. So, yay.
Right. Good Lord.
So I'm going to write him. I'm sending him an email tomorrow. Saying, dude, that State of the Union sucked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was the salmon joke? I want to know what – that was. What a terrible joke.
Yeah, it was smoked. Like, smoked salmon.
I mean, the joke could have been – That they were just, you know, different kinds of salmon are regulated by different branches of different cabinet level departments.
That was enough. You didn't need to go to the smoked.
Right. Different cabinet level departments. And yeah, and then there's the thing about the smokes. I don't even want to tell you who regulates the smoked salmon.
I'm talking about when it's smoked. I'm like, oh,
smoked salmon.
Zing!
Smoked salmon. Boom!
Here's one for the salmon growers industry. Pow! Nailed it!
Not funny. Sorry. Sorry, Mr. President. You're great, but good Lord. Get someone else to punch up your jokes next time. Call Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I promise we won't unpack so much emotional baggage next week. Well, I can't make that promise.
No, I'll probably be.
Never mind.
I'll probably be drunk next week.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, and let me apologize to all our fans for me being so off my game the last couple of weeks. It's been a stressful couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we both have. I mean, with the holidays and all this transition going on,
time zones.
Yeah, yeah. But we're getting back into the swing of things. I promise.
Yeah,
we're not
today,
going.
I think we were very much in the swing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been another long show, and for the first time ever, we've run out of music. It's an hour and a half show, and we literally ran out of theme music. We usually wrap up the show before the theme music is over, but
there it goes again.
I'm gonna go back to the end of it here. I'm gonna skip forward and say thanks for listening, thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. Be back next Thursday with more show. Take it easy, everybody. Bye-bye.